morning. The Senate Judiciary Committee meeting is called to order. Today is Monday, May 2nd, 2022. The time is 9:09 a.m. Apologize for the late start. We're meeting in Capitol Room number 205. Senators in attendance are Senator Keel, Senator Myers, Senator Hughes, myself as Chair, Senator Holland. Senator Schauer is not here at this moment, but I believe he is going to try to join us before we're done today. But we do have a quorum to conduct business. Thank you to Nancy, our recording secretary, and Lydia, our moderator for today. And as a reminder, please silence your cell phones if you have them on board. All right, so at this time, we're going to bring forward, I'm going to bring Senate Bill 140 back before the committee. Senate Bill 140, the short title is Designate Sex for School-Sponsored Sports. This is the second hearing on SB 140 in Senate Judiciary. And at this time, I'll just look to see, is there further discussion on Senate Bill 140? Senator Keel.
Sure. Thanks, Mr. Chairman. A couple of questions that we didn't have enough time for. I appreciate the additional hearing today. Helpful to dig all the way in on this. I wonder if the sponsor or whomever the committee would like could speak directly to the equal protection question that has been raised broadly around the bill. The bill is applicable to trans girls and women, but not to trans boys and men, which strikes me as kind of a what the courts would consider a suspect classification. And I'm interested in how that's defensible constitutionally.
I'll take a stab at it, Mr. Chair.
Senator Hughes, and also I will apologize to all the committee members. I just saw this morning. This will be part of the record. I'll probably give you my copy for right now.
Mr. Chairman, I saw it on Basis before the meeting, so I've skimmed it.
Thanks so much. Senator Hughes.
Thank you. I will take a stab at it, and then if we could bring on the attorneys that we have online to probably answer it better than I can. But first of all, Title IX is based on physiological differences, and that is the basis when there is an interest of the state in regard to certain matters. There can be allowances made, and so the sex-specific sports fall under that in Title IX. And so we're staying consistent with that. Also, I want to make it clear that every student athlete would have at least two options. The person could even either play with a team aligned with their sex at birth or on a co-ed team. So we're not banning. I know I received a letter of opposition to the bill saying we were banning certain students. We are not. Every student would have at least two options. And so they would have an opportunity there. So that's my kind of base for then perhaps going to the attorneys online. And I would suggest perhaps Mr. Chair Matt Sharp, if he could weigh in first on that question.
All right, Matt Sharp, there you are. All right, if you can hear me, please state your name, your affiliation, and your location, and offer any insight on the question.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Matt Sharp. I'm senior counsel with Alliance Defending Freedom, and I'm based in our Atlanta, Georgia office. So on the equal protection question, I do know that the Alaska Constitution, as interpreted by the Alaska Supreme Court, does say that the Alaska Equal Protection Clause gives sort of a heightened protection, more robust protection than the federal Equal Protection Clause. But that being said, the analysis here is going to be very, very similar. So the first question brought up is, what are the classes involved here? What are the two groups that are being treated differently? And under the clear language of this bill, and that's what the Alaska Supreme Court has said in Watson v. State, is that you look to the language of the bill, the two groups being treated differently are males versus females, biological males versus biological females. And so then we go, well, why are we treating them differently? And that's where the findings here and the case law backing this up say that there are physical differences between men and women, that those differences matter, especially on the playing field. And that's why, for example, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals several decades ago ruled and upheld an Arizona policy that, like SB 140, simply said that men are not eligible to compete on women's teams because there's physiological differences. If we allowed men to compete on female teams, that it would virtually erase equality and fairness of opportunity for women in sports. And so in an equal protection clause challenge to that Arizona policy, the Ninth Circuit said, yes, there is differential treatment, but it's permissible because the state has an interest in ensuring equal opportunities for females, for remedying past discrimination where females have been denied opportunities to play in sports on an equal basis as males. And so the state's interest in having a policy that said men are not eligible for women's teams was consistent with that. And I think a similar analysis would apply both under the federal constitution to SB 140, but also the state one as well, that this is just focused on equal opportunities for men and women and that it furthers that state interest in doing so.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Sharp.
Follow up?
Senator Q.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's an interesting, I think, baseline in that answer that there are only two classes, because I'm not sure a court would agree. Certainly the bill speaks to gender as assigned on birth certificates without speaking to chromosomal differences, without speaking to intergender individuals, and without speaking to those who have undergone hormonal treatments for specified periods of time, as is required in some interscholastic associations, competition rules. And so I wonder, doesn't that create additional considerations beyond sex at birth certificate?
May I respond to that first?
Senator Hughes.
Yeah, so first of all, there are medical intersex conditions at birth, and we took care of that in the prior committee of referral in an amendment regarding the American Disability Act, and so those students could be dealt with as needed, and so and we're not talking this. We don't have a definition of gender identity. The definition is of biological sex. So I just want to point that out. It is, and I think you, as you brought up the question, Senator Keel, you were referring to gender identity. These are eligibility requirements, much like you have to have a certain GPA. Your birth date cannot be you can't be older. You have to be within a certain number of birth dates, that kind of thing. This is an eligibility requirement. And when babies are born, they're either assigned as a male or a female. And if it's an intersex condition where there could be chromosomal differences, there is an allowance for that in the bill. So, and I'll defer to Mr. Sharp. And I think it would be good if you called on Mario and Mr. Jacobus as well for some of these questions, Mr. Chair.
All right. So did you want to go to Mr. Sharp first?
Sure.
Mr. Sharp, did you hear that question? Do you have any input on that question?
I did. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I would just affirm what Senator Hughes said in terms of sex has long been recognized both in science and law as being binary. There's male and female. While also acknowledging that there are individuals born with an intersex condition, which is something where during development in the womb, there was either some hormone issue or something that the normal sex characteristics didn't develop. And that's why the Americans with Disabilities Act addresses that and makes sure that individuals with such a condition are protected. But as the Supreme Court recognized, even in the Bostock decision, that sex is biologically based and that there are two sexes and all of our federal and state laws dealing with protections based on sex recognize that. And so this is just building upon that existing precedent and legal recognition that there are two sexes. There are times when those differences between the two sexes matter. Sports is one of those. And this is merely seeking to protect the equal opportunities and fairness for women athletes.
Thank you, Mr. Sharp. And I'll also give, I see Mr. Jacobus is standing there. He was kind enough to provide a legal opinion for us. Mr. Jacobus, if you'd state your name and your affiliation, put yourself on the record, and offer any input on the conversation we've had so far.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Are you able to hear me satisfactorily?
Just fine.
Okay. My name is Kenneth Jacobus. I'm an attorney. I've been in practice in Alaska for over 50 years. I originally was with a large firm. I am by myself now. I'm in Anchorage. I sent a copy to Senator Hughes of my resume, and I also sent a copy of my letter to Senator Hughes and to the chairman this morning. What I would do, basically, and I wouldn't repeat what Mr. Sharp said because he said it already, but I agree, in essence, with what he said. What we've got here is a bill which is only about protecting the right of women to compete fairly in athletic activities. It is not an anti-transgender bill. Transgenders have to be taken into account in the application of the bill, but it's not directed against transgenders. I've been asked to review and comment on the constitutional aspects, and I've written something for you. I don't know how much you want to hear from me now or how many questions you want to ask, but it's difficult to predict how the courts will rule on these issues because we're right at the start of this issue, and many legal questions have still not been decided. For example, the right to privacy in Alaska as it applies to female sports has not been decided. Equal protection, I agree with Mr. Sharp that there is a distinction. I can talk about the Bostock case, why I believe it does not apply, but I put that in my letter. But I don't see any constitutional infirmities with the bill. But even if there are constitutional infirmities, the legislature should not be deterred from passing SB 140 to protect female sports because there might be unanswered constitutional questions. The legislature needs to determine what's in the best interests of the vast majority of Alaskan girls and women that want to fairly participate and compete in athletic endeavors. Now, it's interesting because I think in future we might even have to look at what athletic endeavors we're talking about, because there's an unusual case in Tennessee which was filed last November about a student who was born a woman, changed over to male, wants to compete in the male golf team, is not allowed to do that because in Tennessee, the prohibition extends in two directions, not just to protect female sports. And I think that they're going to win there. I suggested that in the future, we might want to, in order to avoid the equal protection issue, might consider the legislation be amended to prohibit girls on boys' teams, just like boys are prohibited on girls' teams. But I don't think that's a good idea, because there's really no rational reason for not prohibiting boys on... I'm sorry. I have trouble with the from prohibiting girls from participating on boys' teams. In the future, we might have to make some distinction between the type of sport involved. You know, think about boys wanting to participate on girls' wrestling teams or girls playing on boys' football teams. And how do you deal with weightlifting and things like that? But I would support this bill, and I think it needs to be enacted to protect our females and let the courts decide some of these issues that might apply to individual students on individual cases. That's what they're there for. Any questions or anything that I might add? But you do have my letter, which I did send.
And thank you, Mr. Jacobus. I'll just say I appreciate your letter. I found interesting on page, page three, about Patreon to section four, where you mentioned two of the examples cited by the state. One was a student with Turner syndrome, or one who looks masculine. And I had not, like you were saying, how sometimes it's hard to keep in your mind straight when you talk about transgender male, transgender female, biological male, biological female. But both of those cases with Turner syndrome, it affects only females, so the student must be a biological woman to start, which makes it not pertinent to the argument. because we're talking about males being transgender females, and the same thing with masculine looking, which must apply to women, so it must be a biological female to start. I appreciated just those finer points that jumped out at me. But Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the notions that Mr. Jacobus raised in his memo went to the application of Alaska's right to privacy, and I wondered if we could just drill into that a little bit. It certainly is the case. I don't believe that the Alaska courts – I think Mr. Jacobus is right. The Alaska courts have not ruled directly on the right to privacy and transgender persons. but I'm intrigued at the notion of a de minimis infringement on the right to privacy. I can't give the exact quote, but I think the Alaska Supreme Court has said there's nothing more personal than one's body in the context of applying our constitutional right to privacy. So I guess the question arises of the application of the bill, right? We have to look to how this applies on the ground. So if you have a transgender young woman whose birth certificate may have said male at birth, but who has transitioned, is living, has gone through health care treatments to conform with a female gender identity, and whose body bears the marks we associate with being female, who moves into an Alaska high school and wants to compete, she is forced to reveal what the sex on her birth certificate is by the bill, right? She is forced, if she wants to compete at all, to play on a men's team. It's hard to see that as a de minimis infringement on privacy. I wonder if Mr. Jacobus could speak to his analysis.
Mr. Jacobus, care to put yourself on the record and offer some insight?
I wish I could answer the question on that, because medical information is protected by other laws. I don't know what the Alaska Supreme Court is going to do. I wish I could guess, but I don't know. I really don't have an answer to that. I've thought about a lot about it, what's going to happen. But there are a lot of things that have to be disclosed. The gender has to be disclosed in other cases. I don't know. I just don't know what the Alaska Supreme Court is going to do with it. And also, unfortunately, this has become a real political issue. It's not just a legal issue. We're interested in protecting our girls, but on a lot of, I think most people are interested in protecting their daughters. But then there's a group of people that are interested in protecting transgender rights, and they don't seem to be able to get along on this issue very well. So I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what the Alaska Supreme Court would do either. Would they say we're going to protect transgenders, or we're going to protect the majority of girls who need to participate equally in the sports activities? Again, I don't know. I'm sorry, I don't have an answer to that.
Thank you, Mr. Jacobus. Senator Hughes?
And I would like to respond to that, and then, Mr. Chair, go to Mario Byrd and Matt Sharp on it. First of all, the Family Education Rights and Privacy Act is similar to HIPAA in that the information can't be revealed. But expanding on Senator Keel's example of the transgender girl, by virtue of this person not being able to play on the female team, then it would become public that, you know, perhaps someone could conclude what the birth certificate says, but that would never be revealed by the school. However, all I was trying to think where I was going to go here. Oh, so the transgender girl who is identifying as a female, and we'll assume is dressing and looking like a female, there would be other girls that could also play on those male sports. So there could be a group of girls. So there wouldn't be anything particular that is any of those girls, people might scratch their heads and wonder, but there would be nothing conclusive that the public could assume, because other girls would be playing as well, possibly on those sports teams. And same with co-ed. If the person chose to play co-ed, there could be no conclusion made. So I do not think that it breaches privacy because there could be multiple females playing on those guys' teams.
All right. As a bill sponsor, if you want me to check with Mr. Bird, we haven't had him up yet. But Mario Bird, if you can hear me, please state your name, your affiliation, and your location, and offer any insight on the question at hand.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you. My name is Mario Bird. I'm an attorney. I'm practicing in private practice in Anchorage, and I appreciate the invitation back today. I'll just make a couple of comments first about the right to privacy that Mr. Chair, Senator Kuehl brought up, and then another brief comment about the binary nature of the sexes as already established in Alaska law. So Senator Kuehl, I think, asked whether or not the right to privacy allows for a de minimis infringement. I don't know that that language is in the case law. I can tell you that, and this is in everybody's copy of the annotated statutes, you can look it up yourself, the right of privacy is not absolute. And I'm just reading off the cases here that are Article 1, Section 22 of our Constitution. No one has an absolute right to do things in the privacy of his own home, which will affect himself or others adversely, rather versus state. It is part of the judicial function to ensure that governmental infringements of this right are supported by sufficient justification. That's Falcon versus Alaska Public Offices Commission. And in expressing the rights to free speech and privacy, the framers of the state constitution have recognized a right of universal freedom and a right to be left alone, rooted in the natural inclination of human beings. But these rights in a free society such as this have never been recognized as absolute and without limitations, Messerly versus State. So I think there's pretty clear precedent that it's not an unlimited right. So where does the balance need to be struck? I think that's the function of the judiciary. And as I said on Friday, it's also the function of the legislature to implement laws that define the right to privacy, or as I highlighted on Friday, Article 1, Section 3 regarding civil rights, and to put findings in there. And I think that's what this bill does. The second thing I want to point I want to bring out, Mr. Sharp had mentioned that there's plenty of law federally, I presume, that corroborates the binary nature of human sexuality. I just want to point out that that's already in our statute, okay? So Alaska Statute 1418.040, same section where this is going to go, says, and I quote, equal opportunity for both sexes in athletics and in recreation shall be provided in a manner that is commensurate with the general interests of the members of each sex. Both and each are the adjectives used. It presupposes male and female. In fact, that appears later in the statute. That also is the presupposition of one of the cases I mentioned last week, Plass versus State, that struck down legislation that only was directed at the female body. But again, it was tethered not only to the natural, the actual conditions of human life. That's what the case called it. But it's also tethered to the fact that there is a male body and there is a female body. And that's the same distinctions that this bill draws. So those are the two points about Alaska law I would make with regard to some of the issues that have been brought up this morning.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Bird. Senator Kuehl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this is, I think, one of the keys to the discussion. And I guess to the extent we agree there's a problem that needs solving, and as Mr. Jacobus alluded to, I have a couple of daughters myself, and I'm pretty protective. But the question then comes to, I think Mr. Bird read a couple of the Supreme Court's statements interpreting our Constitution about the right to be let alone and about the strength of our rights to privacy and of equal protection. So I think the question then comes to whether there is a close and substantial relationship between the approach this bill takes and the problem if we believe there is one. So just taking, for argument's sake, the idea behind the bill that there is a problem to solve. We talked about in the previous hearing women who compete as women and whose birth certificates say they are female, but who have extremely high naturally occurring testosterone levels. There are some international competition organizations who don't allow them to compete on women's teams. We also have, as was discussed earlier, trans women who have undergone gender-conforming health care. So I very much appreciated the sponsor's inclusion of some studies that speak to average differences, but we're not talking about the rights of averages. We're talking about the rights of individuals. I'm interested in the likelihood, which I think is pretty low, that the courts will take this average-based impingement on all trans women's rights in high school and in college sports, and say that it is closely and substantially tailored to the issue at hand. Aren't there other mechanisms we could use to deal with the theoretical competitive advantage?
May I respond?
Senator Hughes?
And I do think Matt was waiting to respond to the earlier question. So the typical averages between male and female, we did highlight those, but there is actually also research that details testosterone suppression over a period of multiple years and still showing substantial differences. I do believe we referred to that on one of our slides in our quick our condensed presentation, still a difference of, I believe, 9%, and I don't remember if it was speed or strength. But so we looked at, if that's what you're referring to, the average differences between male and female, but we also did hone in on those, the research that applied to those who've undergone hormonal treatments as well.
Could I just ask the age of those treatments, the age of the patient of those treatments in the study?
And for that, Mr. Chair, I'd have to ask my staff because I'm not sure if I know that answer. I know know the answer.
If you'd care to find the answer and put yourself on the record.
For the record, this is Daniel Phelps, staff to Senator Hughes. 1 minute, I'm looking through.
What we can do is we can go to Mr. Sharp because I believe you'd – Mr. Sharp had something to offer in a previous question. We'll give take the spotlight off of Mr. Phelps for just a second. Let him find the correct answer. Mr. Sharp?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. So both on the previous question and then on the one that's asked as well. Starting with the previous question, I think there's a misunderstanding when we're talking about the right to privacy of whether anything in this bill would actually require the public disclosure of any private information regarding the student. So currently, under the Alaska High School Athletic Association rules, students are required to disclose quite a bit of information, including much personal information, to determine their eligibility for sports. Every student has to submit a physical, including both a physical examination and a physical history of any ailments they have, anything like that. I think most of us would agree that such information is probably confidential. In fact, it's quite often protected by federal law, HIPAA, and yet students have to submit it to the school to allow the school to make an eligibility determination. Likewise, the students have to submit their grades. Again, a lot of people would not want their grades, especially if those grades were low, made public, and yet the schools look at the grades to determine whether the student is eligible to play sports. The same is true with weight. When we're talking about wrestling, that students have to certify their weight at the start of each season, again, to determine what class of wrestling they're eligible for. They also have to disclose their disciplinary records. If they've been suspended or certain subject to other disciplinary proceedings, they may be ineligible. All of that information the school is collecting and then letting the student know whether or not they are eligible to participate on the team that they're trying out for. This law would simply add sex to those determinations and would rely upon the birth certificate that schools are already collecting, that already have in their possession, and have already shown themselves able to keep confidential. So, again, just like none of the other eligibility requirements require a public disclosure that violates the right to privacy, I don't think this additional eligibility requirement would do so either. And then just jumping briefly to the question about the studies, as Senator Hughes was talking about, there are numerous studies out there, but I think that the question is not whether an elite female athlete can beat the average guy. If when you take someone like Allison Felix, one of the fastest women in the world, she could dominate any one of us in this room. The proper question is, how would a comparably fit and trained female compare to a comparably fit and trained male? And that's where Allison Felix, again, provides a great example, and there's been studies backing this up. Allison Felix, despite being one of the fastest women, winning world records and Olympic medals, in a given year would be beat by thousands of men that are at the same comparable level as her. Not only that, she would have been beat by over 200 or approximately 200 high school boys. So under 18-year-old boys, comparably fit and trained, still had an advantage over Allison Felix. And it's data like that that shows when we're talking about sex-based classifications, when we're talking about the need to have separate categories for men and women, we recognize that when you have two levels of athletes, men and women, that are comparably fit and trained, men are always going to have a competitive advantage. And that's why we're seeking to preserve the female category based upon those studies showing that men would dominate over the best in the world when it comes to athletic performance when they are comparably fit and trained.
Thank you, Mr. Sharp. Senator Hughes?
And just a quick case in point, Leah Thomas, we're all aware of that. That's been in the news lately, which, by the way, I want to remind folks that we started work on this bill 2 years ago before this was a national issue. But Leah Thomas had met the NCAA guidelines, had undergone testosterone treatment for a minimum of a year. So that case speaks to itself. And I don't know if Dan has an answer.
Mr. Phelps?
Through the chair, this is Daniel Phelps, staff to Senator Hughes. And to answer the previous question asked about the study we showed in last Friday's presentation, I believe Senator Hughes is referring to the Hilton-Lundberg study, which found a performance gap of 10 to 50% depending on the sport in male bodies as compared to female bodies, and
that's
also found
one,
that
10 to 50, 10 to 50?
Okay. Yes, Mr. Chair.
Sorry for the interruption.
And further, after 12 months of testosterone suppression, it found that that transgender women experienced a roughly 5% reduction in their comparative advantage. So their muscle density, their strength, endurance, muscle mass. So with a 10 to 50% advantage and only a 5% reduction after therapy. Ages. That study referred to, I believe, 9 to 17-year-olds.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Phelps. Is there any further discussion? Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll just start by correcting one statement previously made. Not every Alaska school district requires a birth certificate or asks for a biological sex. I promise. with that correction, I guess the other thing that was, I think, an important line of inquiry, there were a couple of comments made early on in this morning's discussion. About federal courts having recognized a binary or biological only basis for sex under Title IX. And I know that was the case at one time, but I guess I've done a little reading and I need to do some more. If any of the presenters or the sponsor could refer me to federal cases in the last, say, 5 to 6 years, that have upheld that distinction as opposed to those district court or circuit court cases that have, and I know it hasn't been to the Supreme Court yet, that have upheld or that have required the consideration of gender identity and trans athletes under Title IX.
I see some, Mr. The only one I really can't see is Mr. Byrd. And I'll go to Mr. Byrd and see if he has any input on this.
I defer to Mr. Sharp. He's far knowledgeable, more knowledgeable than myself when it comes to federal case law. So I, with the chair's permission, I defer to him.
All right. And we'll go to Senator Hughes right now.
Yeah, real quick. I just want to read something because the Bostock case is recent. And I want to read something from the ruling. Listen very carefully. Quote, the employers worry that our decision will sweep beyond Title VII, that's the employment law, Title VII, to other federal or state laws that prohibit sex discrimination. And under Title VII itself, they say sex-segregated bathrooms, locker rooms, and dress codes will prove unsustainable after our decision today. But none of these other laws are before us. We have not had the benefit of adversarial testing about the meaning of their terms, and we do not prejudge any such question today. And with that, if you want to go to Matt, I'm sure he could provide more insight.
Mr. Sharp?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Hughes literally took the words out of my mouth in quoting from the Bostock opinion. That is, within the past couple of years. The one other part I would quote from the opinion, and this is from the majority, is the Supreme Court's understanding of sex. It refers, quote, only to biological distinctions between male and female. And so even when it was operating under it there, it was focused on or understanding, working on an understanding of that's what sex means under federal law, under the U.S. Constitution.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Sharp. Is there any further discussion on Senate Bill 140?
I guess just one last on that point. Certainly the Supreme Court doesn't rule on a given issue before it rules on that issue. I think the reasoning is pretty key in looking at future cases. If there aren't federal district or circuit court cases that uphold the arguments underlying the bill recently, the next question, I guess, would be federal guidance. The United States Department of Education, how are they interpreting Title IX with regard to trans athletes?
I'll let Mr. Sharp answer that, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Sharp?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, if you look historically, the U.S. Department of Education has long understood Title IX and its prohibition on sex discrimination to work exactly like SB 140 would, is recognizing that sex is biologically based, but that it is nonetheless permissible to have separate programs for men and women. Now, recently, starting with the Obama administration, we've started to see this flip-flop back and forth, unfortunately. So in May 2016, the Obama administration issued a Dear Colleague letter saying we are now interpreting sex under Title IX to mean gender identity. However, a federal court enjoined that, and it was overthrown out in court. It was enjoined when President Trump came into office. His Department of Education rescinded that and flipped it back and was enforcing the longstanding understanding that sex means biological differences between men and women. And operating on that, we've now seen, now that President Biden is in office, the U.S. Department of Education is now flipping back again. And I think part of this points out the problem with these federal agencies flip-flopping back and forth, and why I think the Supreme Court and federal courts are ultimately going to be the final decision makers. But again, I think that highlights the Bostock ruling. And again, the Bostock ruling was done knowing that history of what the federal agencies has done, and sort of cut through all that and say, look, when we're talking about sex, we're referring to those biological distinctions between males and females. And as Senator Hughes quoted, recognizing that just because we say someone shouldn't lose their job because they're transgender doesn't mean when it comes to sports or restrooms or other things that we abolish distinctions based on biological sex. And that, as Justice Ginsburg ruled in the VMI case, ruling that while you have to allow women to enroll in the Virginia Military Institute, we still need to have physical differences when it comes to the standards that may be involved for soldiers and recruits there at VMI. So even Justice Ginsburg was recognizing that just because we have equal opportunities doesn't mean we abolish all of the distinctions, and we don't recognize that, especially when it comes to certain physical attributes, there are differences, and those differences are permissible under federal law.
Thank you, Mr. Sharp. And I'll look to Mr. Byrd. Mr. Byrd, do you have any insight to offer on this point?
I think he covered all the points, Mr. Chair, that I would have made and done so more eloquently than I, so I don't have anything to add.
Senator Hughes.
I also want to make a comment. Senator Keel indicated that some schools do not require birth certificates. On DEEB's website, it says that birth certificates are required from enrollment in Alaska's public schools.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. All right. With no further discussion, With no further discussion, we'll do a brief at ease. Senate Judiciary is back in the record. I apologize. I had to go grab a document that was in the next room. But with no further discussion, at this point, we'll move on to amendments. And the only amendment offered so far was amendment number one labeled B.1 by Senator Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move amendment number one.
I will object for discussion. Would you care to explain your amendment or have your staff do it?
I'll let my staff explain technically what it does, and then I will offer why we brought it forward.
Mr. Phelps.
Through the chair, Daniel Phelps, staff to Senator Hughes. This amendment is relatively short. It removes two words, the word or and the word post-secondary from the bill, and then replaces or where it should be now.
It's very simple. I believe it's two lines, to basically three lines to the amendment. But all right, Senator Hughes, did you want to clarify that a little bit?
Yes, I would be very happy to. First of all, I want to make it clear on the record that my intent at some point is to include the post-secondary in this policy. But this time, after a conversation with University of Alaska President Pat Pitney, there are a lot of things up in the air right now, and she personally said she sees the importance of setting this policy for the university and personally supports it. But with a number of balls being juggled right now and not knowing where they're going to land and how best to address it, I want to postpone that policy. But I think it is the physiological differences begin in the womb, and they go all the way until we pass away from this earth. So I am not singling out the public schools, the K-12 only. The intention is when we have a little more information, so we know our starting point would be to bring it forward for the university as well. So, but at this time, we're going to remove that. And I do have a conceptual in addition, just because of a little trip up in speaking with our alleged legal drafter and an additional thing we need to do to the amendment. So when you're ready for that, I can offer that amendment to the amendment.
All right, so this amendment number one, labeled B.1, is to remove post-secondary references from the bill, correct?
Yes.
All right, is there any further discussion? I will withdraw my objection. Is there further objection?
Did you want to? I can run the conceptual as a separate one. Is that how you want to do it? Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
So with no further objection, Amendment 1, labeled B.1, is adopted. All right. So there was a mention of a conceptual amendment. I guess we'll call it conceptual amendment number 1.
And I will move conceptual amendment number 1, Mr. Chair.
I will object for just to, you know, explanation of actually what the conceptual amendment is, and then explanation of the amendment.
Okay. What this would do, it would delete on page 2 lines 5 and 6, and it is just a finish the task that we set out with Ledge Legal Marie Marks, to that we were trying to take care of in amendment number 1. So the conceptual amendment is to, on page 2, delete lines 5 and 6.
All right. Is there any further discussion on conceptual amendment number 1? Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So by deleting the definition of sex here, what does that do to our discussion about what is and is not included in the consideration of who can compete?
Senator Hughes?
I'm sorry, you trailed off in the last. Could you repeat it?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What does that do to our discussion about the consideration of who can compete?
And Mr.
Senator Hughes?
It doesn't change it. And that section, and I could let my staff speak to it, 040, we were just trying to remove it from that section. It doesn't change what we're doing in the bill overall. And if my staff could speak to it.
Mr. Phelps?
Sure. Through the chair, this is Daniel Phelps, staff to Senator Hughes. Section 1418.040, which is entitled Discrimination in Recreational and Athletic Activities Prohibited, currently addresses the university. And in the current version of the bill, we define sex in that section. So what we're doing here is removing the definition of sex for 1418.040. Everything else in the bill stays the same, and none of the more specific definitions and understanding of sex in 150 and following would change.
Senator Keel?
But just thank you. Maybe ask the question. Excuse me. Ask the question from the reverse perspective. What problem are we solving by deleting the definition?
Mr. Helps?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, we are removing, implicating the university in the bill. So currently, 1418.040 in statute references the Board of Regents and establishes what their procedures that they shall adopt. So that's why we're removing reference to that section from the bill.
And may I add to that?
Senator Hughes?
We also would be removing an essence and practice and applicability that the university wouldn't be, by our bill, being required to have an original birth certificate either. They will make their determination as they see fit at this point.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Senator Hughes. Thank you, Senator Keel. Thank you, Mr. Phelps. At this point, I will withdraw my objection to the conceptual amendment number 1. Is there any further objection? With no further objection, conceptual amendment number 1, as stated, is adopted. And, of course, we're going to empower Ledge Legal to do appropriate conforming and technical changes to fulfill the will of the committee. At this time, are there any further amendments to Senate Bill 140? Seeing no further amendments to Senate Bill 140, Senator Hughes, do you have any wrap-up?
Well, I just want to thank the committee for, and for the chair particularly, for getting this scheduled quickly and moving so that we have a chance to move it through the process as we're coming down to the finish line here before long. So I appreciate that. I think that establishing this policy now, as we currently don't have any student athletes, to my knowledge, that are involved, it's good, I think, particularly for our young girls, our young women, to know if they will work hard and train and do all the things that young girls do, whether it's get out there and work out, watch their diet, et cetera, that it will not be for naught, but that they will have a good chance to excel and have the opportunities that Title IX was all about. This is about preserving Title IX. It's been tremendous over the last decades for girls and women. If you remember in my opening statement, we're up into the millions of young girls, and we were in the tens of thousands back in the pre-Title IX. So we just want to preserve that and make sure girls and women aren't discriminated against. I also wanted to point out that that I have had a couple of trans women who wanted to remain unidentified, who support this bill. The Women's Liberation Front, which is a feminist organization that is left on many matters, including being pro-choice, is extremely supportive of this bill and sees it as very necessary. So this is not a partisan issue, Mr. Chair. This is an issue that people understand needs to be settled, and as it is an issue that is occurring more and more, it's important that Alaska sets the policy now, and so that young people know exactly what their opportunities. Like I said, this isn't banning anybody from athletics. Every student will have at least two options, and so we can move forward with that policy in mind. Appreciate the Judiciary Committee again, and I'm happy to see the bill move out today.
All right. Thank you, Senator Hughes. With no further discussion and no further amendments, I will look to Senator Myers for the will of the committee.
Mr. Chair, I move committee substitute for Senate Bill 140, Work Order 32-LS0911/Bravo, as amended, be reported from the committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Is there objection?
There is.
Senator Keel, would you like to speak to your objection?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I promise I'll be briefer than I was last time. I objected to a bill moving. I appreciate a robust discussion here, and I think it's been a good one. But I think, and I'll try and confine myself to issues of the Judiciary Committee. I ultimately think that what we have is a bill in search of a problem to solve. As the sponsor just said, there are exactly no cases, no instances this would affect. But we also have an instrument so blunt that it runs afoul of Alaska's constitution. It does require disclosures of personal information of high school girls, trans girls, in ways that are simply not comparable to did you get a clean bill of health and did you make grades. There just isn't any parallel between that level of breadth and forcing a trans girl to reveal de facto the sex listed on a birth certificate. And so I think those and other right to privacy issues are lethal to the bill constitutionally. I also think the equal protection issues are too great. We have discussed that this bill is so broad as to not really be based on physical differences, but to be based on a line on a birth certificate, which does not have anything to do with physicality, with levels of various hormones that may or may not give physical advantages. And we could go on. We've talked about this during the committee. I think it's also pretty clear that the direction of federal jurisprudence has all run in the opposite direction of where this bill goes in terms of what's constitutionally and permissible under federal law. We talked about other issues in terms of the breadth of lawsuits and the costs that this creates. Those are policy questions as opposed to constitutional ones, but I come down on the other side. So for those and other reasons, I'm going to object to the bill moving today.
All right. Thank you, Senator Keel. So maintaining your objection, Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Yes. With a vote of 3 ayes and 1 nay, Senate Bill 140 has been reported as amended from the committee with individual recommendations and appropriate attached fiscal notes. I do believe that the amendments offered have made the university fiscal notes irrelevant and no longer pertinent, and they will not be advanced with the bill packet. At this point, please don't leave before we sign the paperwork. Is there any other business before the committee? Seeing none, I appreciate the members making themselves available for this unusual 9 a.m. meeting. Appreciate the staff for coming in here and making themselves available for it. Our next meeting is this afternoon, at 1:30 p.m., and we are adjourned at 10:04 a.m.